It's the Bob McCowan Podcast, and it's brought to you by Bet Rivers. Download the Bet Rivers online casino and sportsbook app today with John Shannon, as per usual. Hockey on the agenda today.
Did you stay up late last night?
I didn't. But guys that were involved, sort of, in a big game in the NHL. Maybe the biggest of the night for sure, Vegas against
Boston.
In
my mind, it was.
Yeah.
Could be the Stanley Cup final.
Very well. Could be. Darren Millard, who's in Vegas, and Billy Jaffe, who's in Boston, will join us, and we'll talk to them after this. Hi, this is Bob McCowan for BetRivers.com. Hey, if you're looking for a sports book or casino app, you should check out the BetRivers Sports and Casino app today. Play all of your favorite casino games for real money, anywhere and anytime. Plus, get in the action with each sports game with hundreds of sports betting options. And get ready to feel like a VIP, because you'll earn both loyalty level points and bonus store points on every real money wager you make. You must be 19 plus, available in Ontario only. Please play responsibly. If you have questions or concerns about your gambling or someone close to you, contact Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600 or speak to an advisor free of charge. BetRivers.com. I assume we are talking hockey today, since we have a couple of pucks on the program with us today, Shannon.
No, we're going to be talking about clam chowder and barbecue.
Oh, beautiful. Billy Jaffe is with us from Boston. And
he's in charge of the chowder.
Is in Vegas. Two teams met last night in Boston. The Golden Knights beating the Bruins in what a shootout last night. 4-3? Was that what it was, Jaffe?
It was, McCowan. It was a 4-3 shootout, and it was a shame that the game had to go to a shootout.
Oh, please.
No, it was.
Why? What?
I've never been a fan of the shootout. I thought the Knights were awesome. I thought Logan Thompson was spectacular. And, you know, I mean, the Bruins with the comeback, it was just you end with a skills competition. But I've said this for years, and I know that I sound like a get off my lawn guy. I just, you know, I love overtime. And I get it. I get it why we have shootouts. I do. I get it. I don't like it, though. I don't have to like it.
Would you be thinking the same if the Bruins had won in the shootout?
Yes, I like the shootout too. Yeah, do you spray wash your driveway as you're telling people to get off your lawn?
I do. Except there's a lot of cracks in it right now, Millard. It's not like a fancy, you know, subdivision in Vegas that you all you guys live in the scrub it, you know, perfectly whitewashed life out there.
Hold on, Billy, Darren has people to do that for
him. Yeah, that's even better.
I want it to be known, I don't have a gate in my subdivision, okay? I'm one of the few that doesn't have a gate.
No, that's because the gate's on the other side. They don't want to let you in, man.
Since Jaffe brought this up, so how do we resolve this situation with the shootout? I hate the shootout as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with a tie. Play overtime, and then if you're tied, you're tied. And that's that.
I want a winner. And leaving with just both teams, I think you'll get more safe play with a tie. I want people to go for it.
I think points are important.
Yeah.
And I agree. Listen, I get it. I'll sit here and contradict myself. I know that we want winners. I get it. And I know we can't go 8-10 minutes of 3-on-3 and 2. I get that too. I don't get emotionally wrapped up in the shootout. That's what it is. Like, I was watching the shootout and the goalies were making these nice saves and it's fine. I was into the overtime. I was into the game. I thought the Knights were fantastic. I thought the Bruins comeback was awesome. And then I'm like, okay, well, whoever the hell wins the freaking shootout wins the freaking shootout.
What might have changed your opinion last night, and maybe you're unchangeable, is just you mentioned the goalies making saves. There was no goals. If you got a couple of goals going back and forth during the course of a 5 or 6 or 7 round shootout, it makes it a little bit more involving. That's the only thing. And you can't guarantee that.
I think we've kind of buried the lead.
What's that?
Well, Bruce Cassidy returning to Boston was the story last night. And the Bruins did the right thing with the, you know, as every team does now with the great tribute. And Bruce was emotionally involved, wasn't he, Billy?
He was. And he is an emotional guy, and he's an emotional coach. And it didn't surprise me at all that it got a little dusty on the bench, you know, for the really nice, tastefully done in arena. Welcome back, Bruce. I had a chance to talk to Butch for a long time on Sunday. They had an optional skate, and he was, you know, his typical gregarious, amazing with the media self, you know, and we've gotten to know each other real well over the years. It just anything from youth hockey, because his son's the same age as my son, played for the same organization. But he was into it, Shanny, and the Bruins were into it, and the fans were tremendous. You know what? 6 years now at the NHL level, head coach for maybe any sport for that matter, is a long time. It's a real long time, and they really appreciated everything that he did here. And you know what? This was like I said this. I think I said this on our podcast the other day. This is a hockey trade, and I know it wasn't Montgomery for Cassidy, but it was a move that's worked for both. Like Cassidy getting fired by the Bruins and then going to Vegas where they needed certain elements. It's worked beautifully for them, and the Bruins it's worked beautifully for. I'm thrilled for everybody involved in this, and to see Butch back and to well up a little bit, I actually thought it was awesome because it shows again the human side of the biz, which we don't see often.
I also enjoyed Riley Smith handing the towel back to Bruce Cassidy during the ceremony.
Did you get a sense leading up to this trip that Bruce was excited to go back to Boston?
Yeah, he actually was able to fly under the radar a little bit because everybody was so focused on what was going on at home and trying to find some rhythm on home ice that didn't get talked about a lot until right before they went on the road trip, where it was brought up that this journey would wrap up in Boston. But it was something that was certainly looked forward to by his team, by his family. Anticipated conversation topic inside his own house. And this was arguably the most important emotional coaching game before the result, the coaching game of his career.
What do you think the players, the Vegas players' reaction to this was before the game started? Do you think they play harder? Do you think they try more because of their coach?
This is a team that's had a few of these so far, or milestone moments or big nights. I think of Phil Kessel's record breaker in San Jose. They were emotionally invested to make sure that was a big night for Phil. When Jack Eichel went back to Buffalo, they were engaged to make sure that that was a big night. And last night was no different. And I'll point to their morning skate. They have a tradition where whoever leads the stretch at their morning skate is the person that has the strongest ties to that night's opponent. So Mark Stone in Ottawa, Jack Eichel in Buffalo. You see where this is going. Yesterday, it was the head coach. I've never seen the head coach run the morning stretch at the skate before. But the players realized it. They acknowledged it. And I think that was their way of sending the coach a message saying, we're going to be ready.
I don't know if the head coach will ever do that again. Just, you notice how much issue Butch had getting up off the ice. As he
those
was
knees,
there.
Those knees, man.
Those bad knees. I don't know if he's got to save that for the golf. I think he was like, oh, boy, I need a crane to get up. But it was funny.
We should note, no Eichel. Yeah. And no Petrangelo.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were able to come out with, you know, a shootout victory. Billy, this is your first chance to see Vegas this year in person. How good do you think they are?
Well, I thought they were really good. I thought that they were very well prepared. Shocker. Their head coach knows the Bruins better than anybody, per se, you know. They came out and forechecked the snot out of the Bruins early on. They put pucks under the wall, and they've got some big forwards. Their third and fourth lines, I thought, did a beautiful job. Obviously, the kid Cotter gets moved up without Eichel playing. And, I mean, I don't know his game. You know, I'm watching him live for the first time, and he takes advantage of it. I just thought that they did really well in the first period. And not having Petrangelo, there's another great top-notch defenseman in the lineup that only makes them better. But I thought as the game went on, I thought the Bruins when they found their rhythm, started to show that even though they have big defensemen, the Bruins could start cycling on them. I got to tell you something. The eye test on Logan Thompson, I know, Millard, you get to see him all the time, and, you know, you understand it. Like, I've only seen highlights of him. To watch him live this year like that, I was like, this kid's legit, man. Like, he's a legit, confident goaltender. And I know it's just the first part of the season, but I'm thrilled for the Vegas Golden Knights because they had a whole conundrum with Leonard not coming back. And you can make an argument they're better with Logan Thompson than that they were with Robin Leonard, at least from my eyes. And so, Shanny, a long way of saying, I like the team, well prepared. Mm-hmm. They're going to be, I think, especially in that division, they're going to be tough to knock off the perch there. And I'm telling you, the structure that Butch is going to bring to this team when they really get it down will make it difficult for opponents out there to get second and third opportunities against them.
Millard, you're a target. You see Vegas every night. What's your take on Thompson?
He's a goalie. And when I say he's a goalie, I think he's a bit of a flashback to some of the guys that have just gone through that generation, like a Belfour, a goaltender with personality, like a Patrick Waugh, along that. Like, he's as confident of an athlete as I've come across in a long time for somebody that doesn't have an extensive track record. And I think he's the perfect goaltender for this organization. Last year coming in, had a bit of house money, but made it work and got them into the second last game of the season with an opportunity to make the playoffs. And he didn't give an inch on that confidence coming into this year. His swagger is Bob McCowan-ish. It's really impressive.
Oh my God.
And yes. I'm not overstating that. And he loves the shootout, which is also a big plus for him. Like, he loves these moments. The other night in Pittsburgh, they ended up losing the game. They lost it on a penalty that he took, but he flattened Jake Guentzel in the crease and didn't care. It's like, this is my spot. This is what I'm going to do. Like, he just got this air about him that is really impressive. That is the perfect. Sometimes that can rub people the wrong way, but it works. And I'll just point out, there's three more people in this game for Vegas. Bruce Cassidy wasn't with the team last year. Paul Cotter was in the minors last year. And Logan Thompson was just getting a look at this point last year. Those are three really important players on that team or coach who are new to the organization. That's how much of a step or transition the team has taken.
You missed the Iron Man, too. You know, you have to talk about the Iron Man.
Yeah,
it wasn't there last year. Hey, about Thompson, though, Darren, to me, more than any other right-handed catching goalie, it's more accentuated with him. I don't know why I see it. Maybe I'm just looking for it all the time, but there's not very many right-handed catching goalies out there. But he seems to really use it to his own effectiveness, doesn't he?
But there's more. A couple of years ago, there's three in the league. Now we've got a solid bushel of right-handed goaltenders. No, he does use it to his advantage, and he's very active. You guys, if you watched the game, the listeners and the viewers, you saw his activeness in the crease. He has really, really good hands to the point where I don't think I've seen a goaltender make windmill saves with the blocker before. But he does. Like, he's really active with that. Billy Jaffe, weren't you a goaltender at Michigan one time? Wasn't that the story?
Per Doug McLean, yes. Yeah. Yes, per Doug. And I was an outstanding goalie. So good, in fact, that, you know, I landed.
They made you a defenseman.
Yes. Thank you, Doug, for that.
That Red Berenson's smarter than he thinks.
Oh, my God, yes. He found a great place for me on the bench regularly. Sit here, jackass. One thing that I do want to say about Logan Thompson, and I went old school in the pregame. We were talking about him a little bit. And I said, look, I know he's a lefty compared to this guy, but at 6'4", and you watch him in warmups, you know, he hunches over a lot. Like, he almost attacks you.
Well, he has to.
I know, but he almost reminded me, and hear me out on this, of a left-handed catching Mike Liute. Remember how Mike used to get way down and almost scare the bejesus out, like, especially with that mask on, and he'd look right at like that. But Mike looks so big because he was big at the time at 6'4" and everything. But I thought Logan reminded me of that. I loved it. I appreciated watching him last night. I did. It was a lot of fun.
The best part of Logan's game isn't technique, isn't size, isn't attitude. He doesn't let in bad goals. The stats, and there's all these fancy goaltending stats nowadays, he saves all the shots that he is supposed to and then builds on that. And they still have some structure and things that they have to tidy up. But that's the most impressive part. Pucks that shouldn't go in, don't go in.
How come we don't hear enough, and maybe we do, you do in Vegas, how come we don't hear enough about him being the number one rookie of the year candidate? Because he is.
It's out there. Matty Beniers and Logan Thompson are the two guys right now. And we talked about it on our show yesterday, the pregame show, but just to match Billy Jaffe talking about it on his show. We brought up the fact that this is a high-profile game against the Boston Bruins last night. And with the win streak on the line and people paying attention to it, and that there would be highlights shown all over, if Logan Thompson could win that game, it would just build him up another level or two in this Calder conversation. And by going to the shootout, it did maybe four or five notches.
Let me ask you guys this, Millard, maybe right to you, but because of his activeness, and he is active, right?
Yeah.
Is this like a pitcher, though? Is there any worry, I would ask, of like a pitcher going through the league the first full time, and, you know, he's 8-1 that first half of the season and the second half of the year? I know he played a bit last year, but this is different as the number one this year. This is different. Is there any worry, per se, you being a goalie, Darren Elliott? I don't know if you guys have talked about this or not in Vegas, being a former goalie, that he could get exposed given how he does have a lot of movement in his game.
Yeah, we've discussed it because he was really, really active when he came up. And they quieted his game down considerably. And some of that was probably nerves last year. But he settled his game down. I think what he is what he is now. Mm-hmm. Sean Burke may want to tidy it up a touch. But I think there's less activity there than appears. Because of some of what's going on around the hands and stuff like that. I think he's pretty structurally sound now, and he certainly has taken steps compared to when he first came up.
Actually, I'll tell you something we've never discussed.
Hold on, Bob. You mentioned another name that wasn't there last year.
Sean Burke
is going to make a huge impact. I think, you know, that this guy does not get very much credit, enough credit, for the amount of goaltenders he has touched in this league over the years, you know, all the way back to the, you know, the Mike Smiths and the Devin Dubniks and everyone who has come in contact with, you know, Sean Burke's philosophy of goaltending, they become better goaltenders.
He's a goalie whisperer.
That's another huge addition.
Yeah, goalie whisper. And I watch him, and he's got a really unique style to the way he works. He's not one of those drill sergeants out there pounding his goaltenders in the ice. He does the work, but a lot of it is just talking. A ton of video with Sean Burke. And Devin Dubnyk might be the greatest turnaround in hockey history, what he did, because Dubnyk was done. And he ended up playing, like 40 straight games that year when he went over to Minnesota.
Of course, and Burke is the disciple of the great Benoit Allaire,
yeah,
who still works in New York, was Henrik Lundqvist's whisperer, and has done similar stuff with a lot of goaltenders, Cam Talbot for one, and now Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, I'll take that link, Bob.
Thank you. I'm intrigued by this discussion of a left-handed goaltender and what that actually means. You know, in baseball, we talk about left-handed pitchers. We talk about left-handed hitters. There are no left-handed catchers. There are no left-handed third basemen, and we understand why. What do you think the impact is of a left-handed goaltender in the National Hockey League? Just being left-handed, not the quality of his play overall. Do you think that matters to a guy coming down the wing who's used to seeing right-handed goaltenders all the time, and now here's this left-handed? Does it make a difference, Jaffe?
I can tell you, not as much to what that scenario that you present there, but in the shootout, it makes a difference. In fact, last night, Razor and I, Andrew Raycroft and I, when we do our post-post show, aka Morning Brew, Razor was talking about the plug, had to get it. Razor was talking about the way that, you know, goalies are trained, or shooters are trained for the shootout, mostly to look at, I'm coming in here, and they're so used to the left-handed catching, and I'm going to go this, I'm going to do that. And now you're, it's the one-on-one, but it's not in game. It's, you're thinking about it more. And I would agree with him. If I'm coming in on a right catching glove goalie in a shootout, it changes a lot of what I have practiced.
Sure it does.
Cause you don't get to practice that in practice if you don't have a left-handed or right. a right-handed catching goalie. So in game, I don't think it's as much because it's more bang bang type thing, but shootout, I definitely think that's an advantage for the right catching.
Millard, what do you think?
I absolutely agree on that. We're going to have to call a plumber because Jaffe's dropped so many plugs in this show. So just
well,
keep
what
that
about
in mind.
Your post game show? You'd obviously do a post game show too.
I'm at home for that. There's morning brew. on the subject of Southpaws, here's one for you. I don't know whether we all agree on this, but he's certainly in the top three. Andre Vasilevsky as best goaltender in the National Hockey League. There's a guy who's a natural Southpaw. He's supposed to catch with the other hand, like Logan Thompson, but they didn't have the proper gear in his hometown when he was growing up. So he taught himself how to catch the traditional left-handed way. Imagine if that guy, they had the right gear. Nobody'd be scoring on Tampa Bay.
Maybe. I just find it intriguing that we get into this discussion about left-handed goaltenders and whether that really matters or not.
Still looks funny.
It does look, I mean, it just doesn't look normal. I mean, yeah. I guess Jose Theodore was a southpaw as well. I mean, a right cat. I don't like to call him left-handed because it confuses people, because if you're left-handed, you catch with your right hand, which is, you know, fascinating.
I go southpaw.
Okay. All right. Well, that's why you're who you are, you know, on your post game show.
Who's the first left-handed goaltender you remember in the NHL? Whew.
Darren Elliott.
you'd have to think about it. You have to go back.
Tony Esposito.
Yeah, Tony Esposito was. Yeah, he was that way. In the classic butterfly, left-handed butterfly, right? Or as
that
we
was
call
really
it, Southpaw Butterfly.
That was really throwing people off because, one, he was catching Southpaw. Two, he was doing the butterfly. And three, he had the web, in, you know, stitching in between his pants. So when he
never did.
Butterfly...
He denies that. That never happened. He never cheated once.
And still nobody recognized him in the Miller Lite commercials until he put his mask on with John Davidson and company.
All right, guys, we're about halfway done. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute. Jaffe and Millard are with us back in a moment.
The Bob McCowan Podcast is brought to you by BetterHelp. Unfortunately, life doesn't come with a user manual, so when it's not working for you, it's normal to feel stuck. Navigating any of life's challenges can make you feel unsure, whether it's a career change, a new relationship, or even becoming a parent. As the world's largest therapy service, BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to match with a therapist. If things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. It couldn't be simpler. No waiting rooms, no traffic, no endless searching for the right therapist. The therapists are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and teaching you productive coping skills. Learn more and save 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/bobcast. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/bobcast.
Besides Vegas and Boston last night, another interesting situation I just noticed here. The Vancouver Canucks have started to play better. And
really?
Well, could you please define that?
Define better.
Entertaining.
Different.
Actually, here's the thing. Charlie Lindgren last night played for Montreal. Southpaw goalie.
Well, they put seven past him, didn't they?
They put seven past him.
But Vancouver's only one game under 500 now after that horrible start and all that angst that continues to exist in Vancouver. And suddenly the Canucks are, you know, only a few points out of third place. They're right behind Edmonton and Calgary now. And is this a team that has turned the corner, or is this a team that you just don't know anything about?
What do you think? I think we've got a ways to go around that corner. We're not into a straightaway yet.
I look at this team.
4-0 Montreal. It was 4-0 Montreal in the first period last night. And I mean, Spencer Martin couldn't stop a beach ball. Thatcher Demko's out for 6 weeks. And the town was, I mean, the only thing missing was the mob walking down Georgia Street, you know, with torches trying to, you know, light somebody on fire. It was vicious last night there when you think about a pro Montreal crowd, because there's always pro Montreal crowds in Western Canada. And Vancouver was horrendous, just horrendous. And you had to wonder, you know, and social media kind of reflected it last night, were changes coming? Changes were coming. But they played an amazing third period, and they scored the fastest overtime goal in franchise history last night in 13 seconds. So
yeah,
it's one of those things. I don't know.
Defensively, this crew is lacking. I'm going to be kind. It's the D crew is lacking. And obviously now without Demko, who's been playing on and off, I think with trying to battle in through stuff for a while. Now he's out, as Shanny said, for 6 weeks. And, you know, now you're seeing, is Martin really capable of leading this team full time? And I just think that it's maybe one step forward, at least one and a half, if not two step back with this team. And I think when Bruce Boudreau went there last year, because change was needed, he got the most out of that team for what they could do. You know, it was a nice feel-good moment. Didn't feel great in the offseason about if they're bringing him back or not. You know, a lot of up and down with that. And then they bring him back, and they don't really improve the D at all. And I just look at this team, and I think they are what they are, which is going to be a wide-open team at times, both good and bad. And I don't see that ball playing out the second half of the year the way that they wanted to there.
For an Eastern audience, they're the perfect team to be able to convince you to stay up and watch, because they score. They can score on every night, and they'll may not be 7-6 types games, but they can light it up, and they're going to be entertaining. I just don't know whether they can play enough defense and get enough stops to be successful.
Well, when you think about, you talk about that, Darren, I mean, some of us are silly enough to stay up all the time. We've watched the 9-8 game in Los Angeles with Seattle, which was crazy. And then this thing last night, which was crazy.
Bizarre.
It was. It was. I mean, the Canucks came back and were winning 5-4 and still couldn't hold the lead.
Montreal was scored. Out of it. Montreal called a timeout and was out of it.
Yeah,
and still managed to get it to overtime.
What's interesting to me is clearly this is a team that needs defensive help. It could probably use a second goaltender, since their number one is out, is a big problem. But I've known Gabby almost all my life. He is not a defensive coach. Mm-mm. He's not a guy who preaches that. He was an offensive player. He's an offensive-minded guy. He likes goals. I know it's not his decision, but I don't think he's screaming at the general manager to get him some help on the fence. Do you?
I don't know how much screaming is going on there. I don't know how much talking is going on.
I think if there's screaming going on, it's not that way.
Yeah, exactly. There's a couple of windows up there on that side of it. Look, last night it's way you have to win. That I don't criticize Bruce Boudreau for that. It's the only way that you can manage to pull out a victory. They're not good enough on their back end, but it's not also not going to help the narrative that management has that there's not enough structure with the team. That's a red flag around last night's game as well. And I don't know whether it's Bruce's fault in that case anyway.
If their goal is just to make the playoffs there, I mean, I don't know what their I think they want to restructure the whole thing, quite honestly, or rebuild the whole thing eventually. I do. I think they're, if they get caught in the malaise of mediocrity again, that's just going to hinder this team. Now, I know they signed JT Miller to the long-term contract, and what are they going to do? You know, what are they going to do, though, with their captain? He's been fantastic.
They've got two contracts they've got to be concerned about. Bo Horvat, who now has 20 goals, mm-hmm. best start of his career, and Andrei Kuzmenko.
Yep.
Wow.
Who has really played him? Very well.
He's played very well, but do you trust him for an 8-year deal? Are you saying?
Oh, no. No.
But that's okay. So if you don't trust him for that, if he's not a building block.
But 8-year deals now, guys. I mean, people are giving 8-year deals away like, you know, Darren hands out business cards. You know, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, Rupa Hintz got 8 years. You know?
Yeah, but don't you trust Rupa Hintz more than Kuzmenko?
Yeah, I do. I do because I've seen him longer years. I've seen him longer, and I mean, he's a little older. The thing about Kuzmenko, by the way, that line with Mikheyev, Pettersson, and Kuzmenko has become a real force for the Canucks. They have played very well. And in many ways, this is Elias Pettersson's best year since his rookie year. Because of those two guys. So it's fascinating to, with everything that's going, let's be, you know, black and white about this. Everything that's going wrong in Vancouver, there are some right stories going on. And Kuzmenko, Pettersson, and Mikheyev are one of the things that's going right there. Offensively, as Darren said, this team is, they're fun to watch. Mm-hmm. They know how to score goals. But they also don't know how to stop them going into their own net.
Right. What's their plan, though? That's my question. And if you're not going to re-sign Bo Horvat, you know, you're going to trade him. You got to get some great assets to maybe score some fewer goals and to defend better. Otherwise, I don't see the team getting out of the hamster wheel of where they're at.
Everybody in the league is looking for defensemen, though.
Yeah, of course. Everybody. Every year, though.
But it seems more exaggerated this year. Like Montreal wants defensemen, Toronto wants to. There's a bunch of teams.
No, they don't want them. They need them. Yeah, they need.
Well,
exactly. I don't know. I mean,
Billy, what are you doing now that you're a defenseman?
Yeah. I'm sitting still on the sitting bench. On the bench.
Yeah, that's right.
Doing morning brew.
But actually, the Maple Leafs are playing better with their new group of defensemen than they were.
They are
in the lineup in Muzzin.
Games are low scoring. Maple Leaf games this year are low scoring. You talk about, you know, the big four salaries and their offensive ability, but Maple Leafs are winning a lot of 2-1, 3-2 hockey games.
And I think it's a mindset. Even, you know, without those guys in the lineup, that might have scared them straight, so to speak. And they got their stuff together. Sorry. I know it's a podcast.
That's okay.
Sorry.
Podcast. You can do anything you want.
It feels like they have that. It's like we got to tighten it up now a bit. And if we don't, we're going to be in trouble, even with the big guys up front. And I've enjoyed, like I'm watching, I'm thinking, okay, it seems like they've gotten it more right here. Let's see if they can keep it going in TO that way, because it's much more of a complete style of game and instead of just a fun style of game to watch.
You mentioned getting scared straight, like a kid in high school
Yes.
gets caught and then goes down the right path. I think that's what that early season scuffle out west on that 5-game road trip did, when there was all the talk about a coaching change and big trades and whether or not the manager was going to be let go. It was complete anarchy around the team and with the media. And I think everybody, it was a galvanizing moment for them.
You have two 20-win teams in the NHL right now, New Jersey and Boston. Mm-hmm. Vegas is one back with 19. Forget points for the moment. Are those the three best teams right now in the NHL?
I think they're the three most surprising teams. We didn't know what Boston was going to be. There was talk that the window was closing, and then they made a coaching change just to maybe extend the window a little bit. New Jersey, never expected this. Maybe a bubble playoff team. And Vegas missed the playoffs last year and had a new coach coming in. Best teams? I don't know. But most surprising? They deserve to be battling for that nod.
I think they're the... I watched New Jersey play live the other day, even though they lost, they let the Nashville game get away from them. They had a mindset moment that wasn't, you know, you could just tell they kind of got lazy there, but they're a hell of a fast team, fastest team I've seen so far. And the style that they play is it accentuates that. I mean, they are not afraid to giddy and go as soon as they play a different system. It used to be a box in one. It's a little different now in their own zone. Anyways, the top guy is given the green light to go immediately. As soon as they even sniff out potential.
Blow the zone, right?
Go.
Blow the zone.
It's beyond. It is go, baby, go. And it works so well for them. But the biggest difference there is that Siegenthaler, Damon Severson, those defensemen, Marino, have been excellent. So your question of, are they the best teams in the NHL? Right now, yes. The Bruins, as far as I'm concerned, and all kidding aside, take off the fact that I work, you know, most of the Bruins games. Depth and structure, I've seen them on a regular basis. Yeah, I mean, they've earned these wins. They've earned these 20 wins. And it hasn't been hope. It hasn't been desperate. It's been so businesslike. They wear teams down. Their third periods are phenomenal. So far, I would say they have deserved, and the Devils and the Knights have deserved to be, quote unquote, the best. When it's all said and done, I still think Carolina is going to be there. Sorry, my
dog
is fine for attention over here. The Carolina Hurricanes, I think, are going to be in the conversation. I'm very curious to see, gents, about the New York Rangers. What's going to happen there? There's a lot of chatter coming out of New York City about that, because in theory they should be better. But are they? I don't know. I thought they were going to be still a top four team in the Eastern Conference this year, and they have some leaks to it. And the team that I mean, we played them. We saw them the other night. I mean, when the Bruins played them, Colorado, you can't judge them at all, given all the injuries that they have.
And now Nathan McKinnon's hurt,
and Lekkonen, I don't know how long both those guys are going to be. I haven't seen a report on McKinnon. I don't know if one came out post that Philly game. But I still think when they're healthy, Bob, that Colorado team is excellent.
The fascination for me is that every team in the league except those three that you talked about, Bob, Vegas, New Jersey,
Boston. New Jersey.
Yeah. They're the only three teams that haven't had some sort of swoon already. Everybody else has had a swoon. Everybody's, you know, that you don't hear about the Bruins losing three in a row. You don't hear about New Jersey losing three in a row, nor Vegas. Everybody else has had one of those, you know, brain cramps where they can't seem to win, whether it be on a road trip or over a combination of home and road. That's the consistency that those teams have been able to create, which is why that's why they're at the top of their divisions.
We have a league that should be called the What Are They League. That's what I'm asking about Seattle. I'm asking about Tampa. I'm asking about Winnipeg. Calgary or Winnipeg or Dallas has played some great hockey. What are they? Calgary Flames, New York Islanders. What are they?
They've been good.
We have a league that is, what are they? Which is, it's fine. It's fine. There's a lot of interest there. I like it. I'm not meaning that to be a diss.
Well, you mean, you look at Winnipeg. Winnipeg beats Colorado, albeit Colorado's banged up. They beat them 5-0, and their next game they can't beat Columbus. You know, and they don't play well at all against Columbus. Columbus dominated them.
It's a classic get up for one. I used to see it for years when the Islanders would play the Rangers. When I was with the Islanders organization doing their games, they would be unbelievable against the Rangers, and then you know they would have somebody come in the next game and they couldn't beat him at the Coliseum. Classic.
John, I know you do a lot of stuff in Winnipeg. That's a plug for you. And what you are able to influence the National Hockey League. But the difference in those two Winnipeg games might have been the person standing right in front of where the goal judge used to sit.
You mean Connor Hellebuck?
Yeah.
He's been good.
No, he's been amazing. But if he if he's not amazing, or if Big Save Dave plays, it's a different story.
Riddick is actually, he's got a winning record. I mean, if he's going to play 20 to 25 games, if you can get 20 to 25 points out of him, you're doing okay.
That's why I set you up for this, because you do a lot of Winnipeg stuff.
If he can play 500 hockey, he'll be fine. The guy in Winnipeg that's really, I think, been the difference maker is Josh Morrissey. Josh Morrissey is finally playing at the level that everybody expected him to when he came out of junior hockey. And he played better in his first 2 years in the NHL than he did in the last three. And this year, he's playing very well.
I talked to him on my podcast last week. It was a 40-minute conversation without cliches. That's a plug for him. He's a really cool, fun, interesting guy.
I don't know, but maybe it's just me. I just look at Winnipeg as a team that eventually will come into its own, and its own is mediocrity. I don't think this is a good team.
Oh, I think you're. I think you may be surprised, Bob. Yeah. They're playing. You know, this is a team for the last 3 or 4 years. We would all say, boy, they got great names. They on paper they look really good, and they could never execute. They could never play. They could never play as a team. And what Rick Bowness has them doing now is playing more as a team, and they're doing it without two of their top six forwards, and Nick Ehlers and Mason Appleton, who will be back, won't be back, I don't think, until the new year. And at that point, people are going to say, well, getting Appleton and Ehlers back is better than making a trade. So we don't have to make any trades. Because I'm not sure anybody would.
I was just going to say, now they're like this podcast where they have great names and they're executing.
Well,
sometimes. Except for today.
Yeah. Or to quote Brian Kelly, the coach at LSU, what about your team? How's your team execution? He says, I'm all for it.
I must tell you guys that I hadn't had a swoon moment until I came on the show and saw Millard. I haven't had my swoon moment this year until now. It's been way too long.
But I know. We should just take over this podcast right now and catch up.
Shut up.
There were times I thought you did.
Jaffe and I used to go for coffee all the time.
Oh, God.
Buddies.
Yes. Oh, yes. Sure.
Who cares?
Jaffe, you would go with coffee. And when I went with Jaffe, I'd have to pick up dinner.
Yes, beers and beers.
Well, I should have gone out with you then, John.
That's your second mistake. It first may have been your career choice. Let's talk about disappointments. Is there anybody more disappointing so far than St. Louis?
Well, based on the play of the goaltender and then the early season slump, like it's just been magnified in that. I think if you win a couple, you lose a couple, they can kind of fly under the radar and you go, they'll turn it around. But they've had these massive dips that really question whether or not this is going to be a team that Doug is going to trust to go forward.
You actually bring up a really good point earlier, Darren, because Logan Thompson has swagger when he wins and stops the puck, and Jordan Binnington is what? When he has the same cockiness and can't stop the puck. He was brutal again last night at the Garden. Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're going to act like that, have to back it up, correct?
Craig Berube finally came out and said, it's not working. Like, it's done. We've had enough of the antics. I like the antics. I think they're fun. They put some juice into the game. But if you're going to do it, you better finally end up fighting or getting involved or stop it, because it's distracting them.
I don't mind antics when you're winning and you're playing even better. But, you know, otherwise, as a former skater, you know, if your goalie's becoming the point of attention the whole time for that kind of stuff, I think it wears you down. The other teams that I think are disappointing, I won't put Edmonton into the mix yet because of the Evander Kane injury, because they really miss him a lot. But the whole Jack Campbell thing there has been disappointing. But I would take the Rangers and the Florida Panthers, Bob, and put them into that mix.
You got to bring them into it. Yep.
Yeah, I would, because especially Florida thought that they had rectified their situation down there with regard to bringing in Paul Maurice, and they're just 25 games in. And they're just a couple of points out of the old wild card spot. But, you know, to Millard's, what are they? I mean, what are they in Florida? Are they any better? I don't think they're better than they were last year after the changes and that they made and stuff. And the Rangers, you know, there's so much chatter there about if it's Gerard Gallant, if it's the team, if it's this, if it's that, like, holy smokes. I mean, this was a really good team last year. I don't think you go from really good to being, you know, I don't want to call it a fire sale, but completely up in arms. But it just seems to be like the vibe is trending that direction.
Well, except their goaltender was great last year and is, you know, average this year.
And he's admitted that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of times already. I think twice this year he's called himself out.
Florida, I knew Florida was going to be different this year because they were changing everything from being what almost New Jersey or Vancouver, but Vancouver can't keep the puck out. But Florida scored so many goals last year, and they were going to change that whole thing. So I think that one's going to need some time. On the subject of Binnington, just reminded me of last night. Brad Marchand went over and he pushed Paul Cotter at one point during the game. Cotter had scored a couple of goals, and Marchand got himself in. It was like telling, "Who are you, kid?" But it was also get me going. Marchand's the poster guy for being able to get involved and get himself going. Binnington does it, but doesn't follow up on it.
No, Marchand has got to, you know, yeah, it's funny. Marchand is such a special player to watch all the time, Darren. I mean, he, you know, what he does. And this year, except for the other night, he was actually pretty good against Vegas, but against Colorado, he was finally himself again, as he felt, you know, like he was finally there. He's been asked a lot about, and he's been talking about not having his engine going yet because of the hip surgery and not being able to be in the battle as much. So I don't know if it was frustration there, but the guy is, we all know his history. We understand that, but he's very mentally strong in many ways too, as long as he doesn't cross the line. And if he doesn't, then that is actually a driver for him. You're absolutely right about that.
On this podcast,
he's a unique guy.
On this podcast, Bob McCown is Patrice Bergeron and John Shannon is Brad Marchand. We're just looking for a Pasternak.
I don't know whether that's an insult or a compliment.
No, I love you, Bergeron's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
I just made you a Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
And you're upset about it.
Well, I'm not the Hall of Famer. I'm an Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, you can go into your own Hall of Fame anytime you want, Bob.
Yes, yes. You're a 1,000-point guy, and you win a lot of face-offs.
And Shannon likes to have this great background with him and resume and all these accolades with him, but he's a little poker and a prodder, and he's more Brad Marchand than people would like to admit.
No, I'm just happy to be here. You know, I just, you know, I'm the grout in the tile. You know, I'm just trying to keep things together. You know,
you should be happy to be here.
The grout in the tile.
We only got a couple of minutes left. I want to go back to the very beginning of this program where we talked about, well, Jaffe mostly talked about overtime and hating shootouts. And far be it from me, I'm the least soccer fan of probably, well, most people. But in soccer, you get 3 points for a win and one for a tie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we should give 3 points for a regulation time win in the NHL?
Why not?
And only two for an overtime or a shootout win?
Nah.
See, Shannon shakes his head because he's a hockey puck. He thinks nothing's wrong.
No.
Yes, you do. All the time. Every day on this program.
The goal of this system was to create the perception of playoff races. That was what the system was put in place.
Well, and nobody's buying that crap.
When everybody revels in 800-point teams make the playoffs in the East last year, everybody reveled in it. Everybody did. This is exactly what they wanted to do with this system, and it's working.
Oh, stop. Shut up. Jaffe, what do you think? 2 points for a shootout win?
Yeah.
Three for a regular win?
I do, yeah. I want to see. I think people have done the analytics on it. It would tweak things not as much as maybe we all think it would, but it would still give enough purpose, I think, to say win in regulation. Win it in regulation. And then if you got to go to the overtime again, which at least – has a resemblance to hockey. And I will fully admit, I love the 3-on-3. I do. That I love.
Yeah, so do I.
And then you get to the skills competition and fine. So if you got to go 3 for reg, 2 for shootout or overtime, I'm totally, totally fine with that.
Can I ask a question of the three of you?
Quick.
This? Okay, quickly. I know. Do you think teams will be more aggressive to win in regulation? Will it change anything in regulation? If you
under certain
that?
Circumstances, yes, they will.
Yeah, in the final 5 games of the season.
You're I was going to say right. in March yeah. and April, yes.
Yeah. So really, I don't mind but I don't think it makes a difference.
It probably doesn't make as much as we think, right? It would, because I agree with you, especially when you're doing the whole it's a divisional game, everybody's gonna be like, well, let's get the point. Let's get to the shootout or overtime type of thing. But I think if there's look, Darren, if it impacts 6 weeks of the season, heck yeah, let it impact 6 weeks of the season. Then I think that would be awesome. I do. And I think it's worth a try.
Give you put words in my mouth. I think it's going to impact 2.5 weeks of the season.
Well, I don't know whether we'll find out. I don't think the NHL is contemplating this change.
No, they're not.
We're promoting it. Jaffe, Millard, you're lovely. We thank you for joining us. We hope you will do it again soon.
Well, Jaffe and I got to catch up. So can we do it like tomorrow?
No. Oh. We're busy tomorrow. But, in the next year or two.
We're busy.
Which is code for we have guests that we really want.
Exactly.
On the show.
We're not anticipating another cancellation.
No, I know. I got the text last night at 11. I go, can you do the show? Can you do the show? We love having you.
You got it 20 minutes before I did.
Well, it's because you're out west. You know, Shannon had to get me before I got home to do my own podcast. Did I mention that we have a podcast?
You have mentioned it a couple of times.
Call the plumber.
We gotta go. See you, boys. Thanks.
The world's greatest sporting event only rolls around every 4 years. And every 4 years, everyone becomes a soccer fan. That's right. Billions of eyes are about to fall upon 32 nations battling it out for soccer supremacy. The Men in Blazers podcast will once again be your guide to every incredible goal, every heartbreaking defeat, and every moment of human triumph. This is America's number one soccer podcast, bringing you expert analysis of every U.S. men's national game and exclusive interviews from a slew of athletes and celebrity guests all month long. This is what the world will be talking about. This is the one podcast that makes soccer fun and entertaining for everyone. Follow Men in Blazers on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, or listen early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Our thanks to Jaffe and Millard for being with us. It's always fun.
Yeah. Well, for them.
Well, yeah. We had a football game last night, too, that turned out to be, well, it was pretty dull most of the way, but pretty exciting at the end as you-know-who pulled out a victory and probably an important victory for Tampa.
They're finally back at 500, Bob. and it would, if you could imagine, had New Orleans won, that nobody was even close to 500 in that NFC South division. But I'll tell you what, Dennis Ryan's the coach in New Orleans. Andy Dalton's the quarterback. So Tampa goes down and scores their first touchdown late. And New Orleans is up by 6. And they can't do more than 30 seconds of offense before giving the ball back.
Yep.
That was the key to the game. It wasn't as good as Brady was in the two offensive displays, but New Orleans needed to do a better job of clock management when they had the ball around the 2-minute warning. It was disgusting. That's where the NFL screws up.
But this isn't New Orleans of 2 or 3 years ago. This is a rebuilding organization that right now they're pretty bad. What are they? 4-8?
Well, they're great. Yeah, they're great defensively. They're a good defensive team. It just speaks to the value, and the NFL has done such a good job with this. The value of quarterbacks and having a quality quarterback to manage time, and they just couldn't do it. It was ridiculous.
Well, Tampa Bay wins 17-16. We got to get out of here. Thank you, Shannon. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. And we thank you for watching or listening, as the case may be. Goodbye, everybody.